folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Big Steve.
Anyway, I am officially an earthquake survivor, Jay.
I heard about that one. Now, that doesn't happen more than once in a lifetime.
Huh? I hope not. Goodness.
Yeah, no kidding.
Freaking kind of a shocker there. Like, literally at the epicenter. That was
it, you were in the epicenter, and that thing hit while you were sleeping in the morning? Is
yeah,
that the
yeah, I'd been
time
running,
frame?
Running late, you know, that the spring. It's that good old afternoon, evening thing. And I was like, this is crazy. I jumped up, and just everything shaking. I thought somebody, like, ran off the road and hit the house with a car. You know, that
probably
was
thought you were in a probably thought you were in a cheap hotel or something with quarters
yeah,
in the
yet,
bed there.
Yet
all
again,
of a sudden.
I thought somebody had put another $1.50 in that. So I just let her rip.
What in the world's going on?
What is going on? I'll say this.
At least you weren't on the water. I mean, there could have been tsunamis.
Tsunami. Yeah, it takes a bit more surface area to build the old tsunami, but my God.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, mini tsunami, possibly. That's not off the table. Not off the table. Now, I will say this. Got out after that happened. Got out on the water, and things ended up coming around, but it was spooky. Like, because everybody was talking about it, like, oh, goodness, the earthquake, all that crap.
Yeah.
And then kind of get out there and start doing the thing. I went, it was just like deathly still. So nature reacted for a little bit, which was strange. You know what I'm saying? Like, there wasn't a bug, there wasn't a bird, there wasn't a sound, there wasn't a squirrel. It was just like, you know, you're standing in the middle of a Bob Ross painting in dead silence. But nonetheless, you know, it's not like, I mean, they came around and the muskies started eating again, but there was a pretty weird period there where everything was like, huh? What
yeah, I don't doubt that.
Yeah, I really don't want to deal with that. I'm sure it'll happen again now. It's like one of those, you know, you open Pandora's box. But speaking of Pandora's box, Jay, LiveScope, going to talk a bit, just a hair more about it, because I want to get down to the brass tacks of the matter here shortly. But what's going on at the shop? What's kind of cooking?
What's cooking this week? We got the MEPS sale 15% off, and we've got the Titans and Titan Juniors on sale 15% off. You know, limited time. I'm not sure how much longer those will be on sale.
So. Not long.
Scoops them up now.
Scoop them up. What else? I did see that castable fly, and it says Big Rock. Is that from, like, Big Rock Distribution, or what's the deal with that?
No. It's a guy out of Wisconsin Rapids, center of the state of Wisconsin. That's been making those. He's got some other. He gave us some samples, and we looked at them. The design he's got put into them, and the work is it's pretty neat. Just the way that things balanced and put together. So, yeah, it's like an 8-inch profile musky fly, but it's also a hybrid jig. Obviously, it's weighted. I think they're an ounce or just a shade under an ounce, so you can throw it with musky tackle. Absolutely. We got the darting action, level sync to it.
Very cool.
You know, very weedless, you know, single hooks on it, not trebles. Right. So, yeah, very
well,
weedless.
Well, that's cool. It's kind of like, it's kind of right there in the middle. Is it a fly? Is it not? I was very excited that that new single you wrote with Kanye West came out this week.
That one you forwarded to me?
Yeah,
I got about a minute into it, and I'm like, I didn't understand him, and the title alone is like, what's wrong with you, dude? What's wrong with you?
I was proud of you. That was freaking you just marching around the store carrying an SS shed listening to that one.
So, yeah.
Oh, God. Now, Castable Fly's pretty cool, but yeah, we did a little number there with the shop. Get your early season Titan on, and then probably not going to hit much Q&A, but one highlight I did see this week. Somebody asked about the blades on the planer boards. As far as braid and mono, you can run either. You know, I've seen that question multiple times. With the clips that are on there, can you run mono? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've done it all the way down to like the small stuff, you know. And do not double wrap mono. Not a great idea. You don't really need to, because monofilament is kind of grippy just because of what it's made out of. But Jay, what's kind of the early report there? I was talking to Danny Herbeck earlier this week, and like they had a day where it's freaking in the 90s. I mean, everything just kind of scorching off. Are you seeing everything stabilized?
Wow. Yeah,
well, it was a freak. You know, it wasn't really. Yeah. Mean, but they had like a weird hot push through there. You know, so everything's kind of opened up and funky. I know, obviously, we're right there on the cusp, but what are you hearing from guys that are going out and doing multi-species and walleye right now?
Yeah, overall fishing's been good. It's, in general, stuff's warming, so that's a good trend. You know, we had like 3 nights in a row a while back of real cold nights, so... now we've got some warming weather in the forecast, basically starting today. Yesterday, north wind, low 60s for high. It was like, yuck. But yeah, it's warming up again. So the main thing right now on everybody's mind that I've been talking to at the store is crappie fishing. So people are starting to get into them, and they expect the spawn to start. They were expecting this weekend, but as cold as it was, I think by tomorrow or Tuesday, you're going to be seeing some solid upper 50s, and those fish are going to be, just after the pre-spawn, they'll actually start to spawn, and, you know, they should be catchable in 6 feet of water, that whole jazz.
Sweet.
You know? And,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, guys have been doing pretty good. I haven't heard much walleye stuff, to be honest with you. It's been mostly panfish reports.
Right. Which are they, are they up super shallow, or are they still holding deep?
No, they're not up super shallow, okay. No.
Didn't know, you know, worth the ask. Nope. Where are they at, 10, 15? Because that's the thing. I love, one of my favorite things, early season post-spawn muskies are finding the ones that are on the panfish. You know, that's such a solid game plan. I mean, pretty much any... You know, especially when you have your spawning crappie, or you have the look for bluegill. I mean, it's such a exploitable pattern because they're so freaking easy to find. It's like, okay, yeah, here's tons of crappie. Well, guess what will be in the vicinity? You know, you're kind of always playing that game where, you know, what's the hierarchy of patterns? You know, there's... some muskies are doing this and some muskies are doing that, and I'm going, what's the easiest one? So, which is usually just accessibility, you know, because I mean here in just a few moments, you know, it in the Northwoods, you're going to have everybody beating everything to a froth. You know, where are we at, Jay?
Freaking, yeah, our muskie days. Opener's less than 2 weeks away, 13 days now.
Wow. Yep. What do you do? Yep. crazy on that front, but get ready.
get psyched.
I don't know, it's gonna be interesting to see. I'll tell you, it's felt like, at least for me, I had to kind of look at it and look back at the weather, and it's feeling like an actual spring kind of spring. You know, for years we've kind of done it weirded me out for the last couple of years because I'm so used to that insta jump to hot, right? Where immediately, you know, it warms up just a few weeks and then it's just straight to hot. And it's kind of weird now. I guess I acclimated to that kind of feeling. And now it's like, okay, it's a little more subtle. It's a little more tapered, you know, ramp up. Which I think is probably going to be better in the long run. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not seeing, at least on my end of things, you're not seeing as warm water temperatures as I have in the past. And, it sounds like, you know, everybody's kind of doing that. Again, talking to Big Herbie, you know, they're still finding, I mentioned last week, they're still finding fish. They're pre-spawn. He was out this week and was just like, found a pocket of them. You know, and the classic thing is warmer water, you know, even in that pre-spawn pattern. Because I think that's what you're going to hear, Jay. You know, because I've heard a couple guys already. I've gotten the, hey, I was out, you know, perching it up or whatever the heck they're doing, you know. And it's like, okay, I got one on a crappie jig or whatever, you know, maybe not a crappie jig.
Well, yeah, I had an absolute dandy up a couple hours ago, 2-3 hours ago. Yeah, big fish.
Went
around a little point, and there was a lot of suspended. I'm guessing they were crappie. Mm-hmm. Could have been perch, but I think they were crappie, and just, 20 feet around the corner off wood.
Yeah.
Here it comes, and turned 180 degrees, and I'm like, holy cow, good fish, And,
mm-hmm.
Spinnerbait bass fishing is what I was doing, mm-hmm. so, that it disappeared, but man, that was a cool sea, man. I'm telling you,
you should go back,
get your blood pumping,
go back later with a kill rig. I'm teasing. Good Jay just got to strap up a crappie on an old fashioned kill rig.
Yeah,
there you go. Now, yeah, that's so, it's so reliable and so stable of a pattern of muskies on crappie. In the early part of the year, I mean, depending on where you're at, it's all that pattern is kind of transcendent. Where there are crappies present, they're gonna be there, and most people always associate the South with your timber and things of that nature. But I mean, you look at like how much was written about timber doodling walleyes, Jay. Right?
Sure.
I can't recall the gentleman's name. Great writer right there in town. John Bond, writer. How do you pronounce
it? Greg Bone.
Greg Bone. My apologies.
Yep.
Kind of developed a lot of those tactics, and a lot of it was around timber. So you might not have a bunch of it, but it's even better when you don't, especially in the north. Like if you don't have a ton of timber, that timber is way more beneficial. Right.
Wood's huge right now. Absolutely.
Wood is huge.
And the crappie, they're going to spawn before the bluegills. Bluegills are one of the last fish to spawn, really, to be honest, I think. Can't think of anything that spawns later than bluegills. They like mid-60s or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Crappie's the pattern for a couple mm-hmm. weeks here. Opening, yeah, I would suggest that for opening week in less than 2 weeks now. Key on them, man.
Just riffing here and talking out loud sometimes. Whether it be actual laydowns, deadfall, whatever you want to call it, in your body of water. But I'll tell you, if you go out and the muskies have not spawned yet, and I'm hearing mixed bags everywhere, Jay, I just assume this is going to be pretty much transcendent. If you're hitting multiple bodies of water or getting multiple reports from folks. Which is, hey, on Lake X, Y, and Z, probably they've probably done the deed, and then, this body of water, that body of water. That crappie pattern on those pre-spawn muskies, they're there. They're dialed in on it, which is don't forget cribs. And a lot of people in the very early part of the season, yeah. So we all go into the early part of muskie season with the absolute expectation that it's going to be purely shallow, right? It's going to be what everyone's talked about. Oh, I'm breaking out my MEPS. I'm breaking out my Titan Junior. I'm breaking out my baby shallow raider. I mean, blah, 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 blah. You could condense quote unquote early season muskie fishing into one plano flat most of the time, right?
I'm going to focus on the 4 foot emerging weeds with, shallow.
And that's exactly. It. Yeah. And it's a very narrow bandwidth. And generally that will work. But if you have a mixed bag, once you're able to target and you go, oh, okay, nobody's really doing much. I'm not hearing much coming out of the body of water I'm targeting. If you need a quick pivot, the first place to pivot is going to be that timber or cribs or both if you have them. And I say that because there's going to be a lot of people in that northern zone. I'm betting men. I bet as it's kind of one of these things is the weather changes and it goes up through the system. I've kind of heard like from where I'm at geographically all the way up as people start fishing more and more and more and more. And it's like kind of the curtain coming up. It's the same deal. It's a mixed bag. And you're going to need those places to pivot. I mean, obviously, people be able to fish in other areas right now, Jay, in the southern zone and all this stuff. Warm water, is going to be your number one thing, but you might need to pivot quickly to, okay, maybe I'm on that northern shoreline, or maybe I'm on that northern flats and nothing's cooking. Where would the warmest submerged cover be, right? That's wood-based, or cribs, right? Because a lot of times you get those cribs, and how many lakes you've been on, Jay, where it's just like, they just drop the cribs and they're all at 15 feet because why not? That's what they felt like putting them at that day. And yeah, it's something I haven't, you know, we haven't expressed very often, but okay. So let's say we're faced with a scenario where we have the cribs. We don't really have any like natural deadfall, and we need to locate crappie, but you go, oh, well, they should be shallow and warmer. It's kind of that hierarchy of, they're going to be where the food's at. The waiting on food will be far heavier for actively feeding fish. You see what I'm saying? It's just like, if the crappie are on the deeper cribs that they're holding there, that's where you expect to find the actually actively feeding muskies, where they might go down, feed in that zone, and then retreat, metabolize in warmer stuff. Right? And I've seen it over the years where you're going, I'm moving fish up shallow and they're not eating anything. You can't get them to go. And I'm talking like days of this, and you go, oh, surely they're doing, you know, and you go, bam, you know, here I'm trolling over these deeper cribs, or, you know, even jigging. And that's one thing I'm just trying to give everybody a leg up here on getting a kickstart. Do not sleep on jigging in timber and jigging over cribs in the early part of the season. It can be just ridiculously good, because you're going to find a lot of muskies if you're in a body of water where weeds are light, you know. Okay, so the emergent vegetation hasn't came into play really, or it's really not great in comparison to early seasons of past, blah 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 blah. Moving, transition to that hard cover, those cribs in the timber, they're going to be there. They're going to stage up on something. So having, like I said, have that in the back of your mind, or have that game plan there for a really quick pivot, for if you're not seeing things pop off the way you want to see them popping off in the shallows, that's the first place I'm going to go. You know,
yeah, and cool.
The other thing, Jay, I would say is this, for the frozen chosen, they're still waiting for the northern opener, which is, again, I think you mentioned last week, the river's actually high. You've actually got water in the Wisconsin again, where that's been, you know, a lot of rivers have been down up there in low water and pretty much not beat up for the last couple of years. Would that be a truism
I think the Wisconsin is full, I believe. Last time I looked there's a website that shows how much water's in it, you know. So, yeah, right. Yeah, that's not uncommon that it is extremely low over the winter, and they let water in. They just stop letting water out, I guess, is what right, fills it up. So yeah, they're retaining it. So upstream from the Wisconsin near me is the Eagle River chain. So, and that's, I think it's federally regulated, so that's got to stay at X amount of water in there. So.
Right, right. They have to keep.
But we're in an extreme dry. We are in extreme dry stretch right now. It's just horrifically dry, and the air is just
arid.
No humidity in it. So, we'll see what happens. See if they'll be able to retain all the water around here, because the lakes are low, though. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple lakes we looked at when Tom and I were filming this last week. Some video stuff. And water level's down, so we need rain. Let's put it that way. You can still get your boat in, everything, except, right, you know, a few small lakes that are ridiculous. But other than that, hey, that's my report, Steve, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, it's just interesting. It's a different ball game year to year, and you know.
How's the water level down by you guys? Is it just like 4 inches of rain one day, and then you get 2 weeks with no rain?
No, been wet. It's been, I mean, we had, dude, what was it, a couple months ago, you had like the hurricane. We've had like the hurricane came through, like biblical rain. It's just days of rain which is a couple pumlings. It's actually been very wet, so we've probably holding on to all your extra moisture. So anyway, let's get Bob on here and gab.
Dr. Bob?
Yep, there it goes. All right, Jay, I grab my good friend Dr. Bob here. Doctor's
in the house.
Doctor's in the house. And
good to hear from you guys.
Absolutely. And
you too.
The cut it with the pleasantries, boys.
Anyway. I missed you, Bob. I missed you.
Anyway, we have no time for pleasantries.
Straight to the chase, Steven.
Straight to the chase. Now, it's funny. The thing with this LiveScope deal, just flat out. Last week, I had Steve and Cal on. Bob just did a number with somebody on like a streaming thing. And it was funny. The conversation, me and Bob were chortling about this in a call we made to one another, which was a lot of the conversation that's taking place on both sides are from me and, as far as questions and things of that nature. And what people don't realize is some of the questions I had for Steve Herbeck and Cal Ritchie were from me and Bob trading notes back and forth. Right.
Yeah.
And just wanted to gab about it. And I got a message this week and paraphrasing, got a lot of messages about the topic and some people going, what is your exact stance? Right. And others going, thank you for what you're doing. And others going, not thank you, but the other you for what you're doing. It's got a lot of th. It's more of a F sound than the thank you. It's right. More of a you, right, sound. And so a different enunciation comes out of the mouth, slightly different. So obviously mixed bag. However,
oh, yeah, it's mixed.
It's mixed. It's like it's musky fishing and opinions are like those things of planters. Like if you want to talk mixed nuts, you go down to frickin' Kroger, right? And you get the mixed nuts and it's 90% peanuts, right? Which no one wants. And there's a couple cashews in there. And so I try to focus on the cashews, not the mixed nuts.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. But it's one of those things of I thought it would be beneficial just to kind of riff it out because I know like the dynamic Bob and I have, and unbeknownst to most, Bob, you're working, you know, you're a professor of physics, but you write with the app for years, right? You've written a lot of great pieces with the app. You're going to be working with Livingston a bit. What's fun with me and Bob is when we get on the boat together, we can have polite discourse on numerous topics, right? And I think, which is interesting, I think what I'm more interested in is exploring the overarching topic and what are the core of the arguments and what is the actual, what's tangible, what's emotional, and separating the two, right?
Yeah.
And I think from that standpoint, which is just looking at, I think it's always healthy when there's something that people are vitriolic about, something people are emotional about, is to separate the emotion from the equation, look at the facts of things. What is the actual this, that, other? Because there's so much anecdotal information that gets tossed around. What are your thoughts, Bob? I mean, obviously, it's basically I'm prattling on about myth. Methodology, but what's kind of your thoughts on the entire conversation about LiveScope is just first like that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think my thought on it is that we have to, I think one thing that kind of brings us together, most of the folks that are actually care about their fisheries, they absolutely do.
Except for Jay.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, I always thought he did. I mean,
you missed his story about he kill rigged one earlier today.
Oh, okay. Well, I hadn't heard that.
I had to add it out.
He
was bragging about it. Went down there, bought him a fat head and kill rigged one. But yeah, other than Essie, everybody's pretty good about it. Yeah.
But I think the core of it is that, I mean, if we recognize that most folks care about the fishery, people that use it and don't, they actually do care about the fishery. I think the disagreement that can happen is the degree to which their particular tactics or techniques are affecting the fishery. And there's folks that have thoughts that the technique of sharpshooting, for instance, which is the one that seems to be the hot button topic, really very, very much elevates people's catch rates and stuff like that. And then there are those who say, well, maybe it doesn't affect catch rates all that much, and or that it affects it probably in a positive way, like it helps, but to what degree does it help? Is it a, you know, what sort of effect is it? Is it a, oh, you catch, you know, 25% more fish with with that technique, or do you catch 10 times as many fish with that technique? And in order to know what that is, you gotta know who, how many first and fish foremost, are getting
we,
caught.
Yeah, we have to have documentation first and foremost. But
well, I mean, what you do is you want to know. I mean, you want to know what's true and what isn't, and it's hard to pick it out. And but overall, the more fish get caught, the more handling there's going to be. And Herbie was bringing this up last week. He's right. The more handling that happens, the more delayed mortality, the absolute mortality you're going to see. And the question is, how much is the technique of sharpshooting actually affecting our populations? And I think we can have a couple of different paths to figuring out what that would be. And I think it's probably a good idea to be cautious about that, because fisheries like Eagle, where these signs are going to be posted, and I'll say this also too, there's a very, very similar movement happening for Leech Lake that happened a couple maybe a month or so ago. Very, very similar idea, and both of those share the fact that those are natural populations. They are they maintain those populations through natural reproduction only. There's no stocking. And I expect that those fisheries like that are vulnerable. They're potentially more vulnerable. It's hard to get them back when they, if it goes the wrong way.
Right.
And so in those situations, you know, that means that, you know, I think out of an abundance of caution, you know, what sort of things could you think about to limit the impacts? And these suggestions seem like they might be sort of that's an interesting option. I actually kind of like the way that they went with them. Make it voluntary. Please don't do this. Please don't use this technique.
Right.
I mean, I look at them as sort of polite requests to not, you know, engage in activity that's going to be potentially harmful to that resource.
I think that's the, you pretty much summarized a lot of my feelings just from gabbing about it, which is one of those things where looking at Eagle, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Cal Ritchie pointed out a hell of a point. It's not even a legal fish to pull out of the water, most of them.
Yep.
Okay. So they're protecting the resources and turning a blind eye. And all these different elements of that, where the absolute pro or the pro scoping, that's the thing. And again, we finally can call it what it is. It's not even a live scope thing. It's a sharpshooting ban.
Yeah.
From behind closed doors, that's what everybody wants. I mean, I've heard it. It is what it is. I'm not saying that's what I want. I'm just saying the people advocating this, that's the crux of the matter, which is it makes sense to say, okay, hold off on this until we know. But on that tip, because like you said, you're not going to be able to replenish that resource, because I don't believe there's a ministry in Canada that's going to have the funds or the backing to do anything. You were saying Leech, right? That's kind of the vibe there. And I'm hearing that quite a bit, you know, on the flip side of that though, however, And my argument is always this, because this is what it is. At a certain point, there's a conversation, an advocation for people that do that, and you go, okay, on other bodies of water, yes, it makes sense. Let me back it up so I don't misspeak. It makes sense, and I 100% advocate a ban on that or something of that nature to protect that fishery until we understand, right? Mm-hmm. Don't damage the resource, because there's no going backwards on this, really, right? But
potentially,
if,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Potential. Well, funding-wise.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. If the funds are there and the Ministry of Fisheries says, oh, we're ready to go, and it's just not going to happen, right? The funding is not there. Minnesota, every Minnesotan I speak to, guess what they complain about? Stocking and the lack thereof, right? Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah.
Look at Mille Lacs.
The other thing about Leech, though, that's the mothership. Like, mm-hmm. every fish that is stocked in Minnesota has its origin story starting each lake. I mean, mm-hmm. they extract fish, they extract eggs from that lake to feed, or sorry, they extract fish in that lake occasionally mm-hmm. to replenish the broodstock lakes that they do the egg take operations in for the entire state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly a concern for our stocking program, is if leech crashes, can you maintain the broodstock lakes anymore?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't just affect leech anymore.
Yeah, that's downhill from there. Yeah,
right.
You got that other tiny little strain? You got that creek strain up there.
Oh, the shoe pox.
Yes, we could just strain. The yeah. whole state stock was 24 inch shoe pox monsters. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Which is, hey, most that people don't. Sad, yeah, most people don't know about that. But if you're bored, right. look up the shoe pox strain, which is pretty cool.
It's like shoe pack, right?
Shoe pack.
It's pronounced shoe pack. Yeah.
But
there's a lake.
I say scope the hell out of leech now. Just put the shoe pack back in. There's no harm, no foul. Okay, that is right. Joking, people. Don't clip that. But you know, it makes sense on that as an abundance of caution. You know, what would, and it's one of those things, how do we get a consensus, or because I go back to that study that was done in Mississippi on crappie, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's a governmentally funded study, and they decimated the crappie, and now it's not going to rebound forever. That's great. You know, if you're anti-scoper, you can take that one and run up the hill and say, look at this.
Right.
What's the logical, or how would we really have to get empirical data on this? Like, what would have to happen for a study that would kind of check the boxes to see if scope's increasing mortality?
Well, that's pretty tough to you're going to have to make inferences based on population assessments, but you'd have to infer it, right? I mean, you mm-hmm. wouldn't know right. that it was scope that was doing it. You would just have to say, well, let's do a population assessment. This is the way you do it as a scientist. Mm-hmm. You'd say, let's do a population assessment on such and such lake where it's popular to sharpshoot.
Right.
Let's do the population assessment. We'll get a baseline. And then we'll continue doing everything else the same way, unregulated, whatever. And then 5 years later, whatever it is, we'll do another population assessment. 2 years later, you know, whatever it takes, do another population assessment. And we'll see what's happened to the muskie population and see if we can, you know, attribute that to overall higher levels of mortality. It's probably due to scope, but it'd be difficult to say that it is.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be environmental conditions, overall fishing pressure increasing. Yeah. There's all sorts of things that it could be.
So it's
but you'd want a baseline. So you know what? These other lakes, though, you could use leech as your baseline if you say, hey, let's have a similar lake or something like that, and let's have it where there's not scope on that lake. And what we can then compare the population increases, decreases in both lakes, and that's how you try to isolate the effect of scope,
right,
of sharpshooting specifically, I think, is what people are most worried about. I don't think anyone's worried about, oh, you saw follow on live scope. Well, that's
right.
Cheating. I don't think anyone's really complaining too much about that. Maybe there are some, but I think sharpshooting is the one that people are most concerned about.
Well, I, you know, kind of lead you by the nose to walk through that process, which I think is why, you know, the operative thing in that entire statement is, okay, what the duration of a true study to understand, mm-hmm. let's say it's a 5-year study at a minimum, right? Because mm-hmm. you've got to account for climactic impact, everything else, right? Yep. I have seen lodges and entire towns, to be honest with you, practically fold when a fishery goes downhill.
Right.
You know, you've got the example there in Minnesota, Mille Lacs, that's a different animal mm-hmm. now.
Yeah.
You know, they're still very awesome. Different. Very, you know, far different the amount of, there was a heck of a lot of guys making a living on that place. And then it was like, boom, done. You know, so I think right. that's the conversation. You know, and the other thing, but, you know, flip side of the coin, just to say it, there's also a conversation, you know, let's say, and I hate, okay, backing up yet again, because I'm trying to be as egalitarian as possible. Understand protecting a native fishery, right? But,
yeah.
you know, where's the slippery slope of limiting methodology? Because my argument has been this. Well, let's say sharpshooting makes it easier. I actually fielded an email or along these regards. Don't reply to all of them, but this one got me. And the guy said, it makes it far too easy, right? And I've seen a lot of people say that. And I've also seen guys go, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, regardless. There's a lot of tools that make musky fishing easier,
mm-hmm.
right? Where, whether it be information, whether it be mapping, there's a litany of everything is a tool that fundamentally, every product sold to you is fundamentally something to make this easier. Like in my rational argument, and Bob pointed this out and others in their own way, what is the difficulty level supposed to be? What is, and this is not
right.
And this question, this is not the last time this is going to be posed, because if you think what we know right now technologically is the biggest problem we're going to have, I'm interested in this topic because it's only going to get worse. When you see what they have in saltwater for fishing tuna right now, muskies will be screwed, right? There is live scope sonar, folks, that has target lock that will drive your boat to the tuna.
Why are you saying these things? What the fuck?
Right? Well, because.
Right. Yeah, it's come. All stuff comes, right? I mean, technology does not go backwards.
Not yet.
It goes forwards. So
if it does, Bob, it's a dystopian hellscape, and you'll
right.
be
right. Something has gone wrong.
Right. If technology stops, you're the last problem you will ever have will be recreational fishing. You might be eating a creek chub for lunch. You know, look like Gollum down there. But that's why the conversation interests me so much is you go, okay.
Well, what do you guys think is the strongest argument to ban forward facing sonar?
I don't think there is one.
Okay. I mean, the strongest argument is, I mean, if folks were right, for instance, that it increases your catch rates routinely by a factor of 10, I think that would be, for me, I would go, well, that's probably, like, that turns a 10 muskie a year person into 100 muskie a year person. It's like, well, that seems like maybe
that person is catching too many fish and there's going to be some mortality involved.
Right.
So and we should not use equipment to help us catch more fish.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, if it makes a 10 muskie a person, 100 muskie a year person, then 100 muskie a person is 1,000 muskie a year person. And it's like, well, the levels of mortality you're going to induce in such a case is probably ones that no fishery could then sustain that, because muskies are a long-lived species. And but you know what I mean? It's,
well, I understand where you're coming from. You know, my experience, people using forward-facing sonar effectively are pretty serious anglers, and they really respect the resource, and they're really good about handling.
Right.
So
that's
a good point. Yeah.
That's why when you said the ban, like my knee jerk to be no, right? Which is the genie's out of the bottle. It's how the it's not the technology. It's the methodology. Right.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point you go, the way that I choose, and I mean, I had this conversation with a client on the boat this week that was, he was aware of the conversation, but not aware of it, like podcast or anything, right? Older gentleman. And I said, I am choosing the kind of experience that I want to have. Right.
Right.
This is kind of like what, where the down the road, the for, not forward facing center, but forward facing technology, forward, you know, moving, just wait 5 years down the road, boys. It might be, that's why I want to have this conversation, because for me, when I bring up the difficulty thing, I remember what it was like with monofilament line and a 6 foot rod, and I go, wow, my 9 foot six shield rod in my Tranks is like space age.
Yep.
Are we going to hit a point where we go, this is too much? Now, again, acquiescing out of the impact of sharpshooting, where is there a cutoff technologically where you go, the advantages are too high? Is that you know, I hear a lot of things that are like an ethical thing. It's not ethical, or it's this or it's that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that is up for interpretation.
Sure. And with some people, they won't troll. They don't feel that's ethical. They want to cast for them because that's traditional.
Count. The guy, that, yeah. I've heard
but a million that's all times. Some people think. That's their point of view.
I've heard a million times, I don't want to troll. Or I don't like trolling because the guy driving the boat caught the fish. Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, did the panoptics catch the fish before facing sonar? Like, that's why I think it's interesting, that capacity, because again, to reiterate, put your torches down, villagers. the adults are speaking. And the abundance of caution is the most important thing, right? Because, and this is horrible, and to the guys that I personally, and again, I'll own it, chapters in the book years ago now, and we go back to old podcasts, and Bob Coinsworth on my boat told me, how many years ahead was I on this crap? With live imaging, right. He said, I'm not tooting my horn, but I'm owning it, right? I'm taking my new ownership, and having done that, been there, done that, I made a decision in that where you go, okay, that's not how I like to fish. And I can empathize with the guys that enjoy that.
Yeah.
Right? So, hey, you like to fish that way? It's probably smart not to do it on these bodies of waters until we have an understanding. That's the only thing that I'm at, right? Because you go, and it's unfortunate because the people that are wholly anti live scope, right? They're ready to burn them at the stake. Right? And that's the nature of musky fishing. Burn them.
Yeah.
Whereas it's just, at the end of the day, these are just some dudes that want to catch some fish, right? They're not trying to have a negative impact. I mean, if it was like Cap and Tire Iron's, you know, freaking scope and beat guide service, you know, that's a different animal. But it's like, you know, kind of that dynamic and that battle of, okay, let's see if this is going to have that impact. And I think it's important to work through this because, again, what's coming next?
Right. Well, I think what Jay brought up there is really a really good point about trolling Now, I don't know if folks remember the history of motor trolling in Wisconsin.
No, tell us, Dr. Bob.
Interesting. Well, I
great
mean,
segue.
Well, like, so when it was like in the 1920s when the light two-cylinder outboard motor was invented, Wisconsin decided that they were going to ban motor trolling for all fish because they thought it would decimate fishery populations. And it took 90 years for that restriction to be lifted. Now, that affected the culture in Wisconsin muskie fishing quite a lot.
Yeah. Slightly.
Not to say it was good or bad, but it definitely had an effect. But that was out of an abundance of caution. And that, whether you think it was warranted or not, I think we can probably historically say that was probably a little bit over cautious. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the history that I'm kind of thinking of when I see folks calling for a ban on live scope in total. And I think to myself, well, is this the Wisconsin ban on motor trolling all over again?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be an impact. Is it as big as we think it's going to be? Did we save save fishing in Wisconsin for, 90 years by having that reg in place? And I mean, it was definitely protected from it.
Right.
But what did you protect it from, really?
Right.
And I think this is definitely of more concern than motor trolling was. But at the time in the 1920s, I wasn't around. But I will guess that
Jay
there were
was.
People that were very most.
he just started at the muskie shop as his first week.
Yeah, shut up, Steve.
But I think that's a good point. I don't know if the parallel there isn't perfect.
No, that's very good. No, that's a really good point. Did it change the culture you said earlier?
Yeah,
think about that. Yeah, the traditional. Look at every painting that's done in Wisconsin that has to do with muskie fishing. What is it? No canoe with a Johnson, old Johnson outboard and a couple guys, casting over the, over the stump, and then the muskie comes out and hits a topwater.
Right. Or even oars.
Oars. Yeah.
From the olden days, right? But
you say that, and that's that almost bodes, here's the nostalgic, summarization or conceptualization of what it's supposed to be.
Right.
And we're a bastardization of what that is already.
Right.
100%.
Right.
Yeah, so even.
But the thought on it is, it's, there are people, there are good folks here thinking to themselves, this could really hurt things.
Right.
And they're good folks. They're trying to protect the resource. But I'll say this. I'll just offer. Please don't. Maybe you don't need to villainize the people that are also
burn
interested
them.
In using the,
burn
the resource.
Them to death.
But they don't agree with which, about the impact that you think maybe is having.
Right.
And you know what? Somebody might just be right on this. And the folks who are very concerned might be right.
Mm-hmm.
They might be right. But before we do a wholesale reg, which no one has said anything about really yet, we do that, I think what they're doing on Eagle and what they're doing on Leech right there sort of threads the needle of right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a voluntary deal.
Yeah, it's very safe.
Right. Yep. It's voluntary, but it's getting the message out there about, this could have a negative impact. And we think that it's people should know about it. And if those signs at landings are getting folks to think carefully about the impact that their use of this technology has on the fishery, in addition to the impact it's having about their how good their day is.
Right.
As far as how many fish they're catching today or this weekend or this week, but they're also thinking about that impact that it has on the fishery. then that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And if that means, you know, that there's some folks, you know, there's more people are thinking about it, that's great. I think that's good.
It's interesting because it brings yet again, as muskie fishermen as a whole have definitely are a sanctimonious bunch, right? And so if we get an opportunity to tell you, here's what you should be doing. All right. Here's everything you're doing wrong, and I'm going to let you know why you're wrong, how you're wrong, and make sure I shame you while doing so. But yeah, at the end of the day, you know, like you said early on the onset of this, you know, the goal is a healthy fishery for pretty much everybody. But
right. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that thing of, I think for if your methodology and if your preferred methodology is sharpshooting, I have nothing against you. It's just like, okay, let's. From my standpoint, my step on it is more based on Moore's Law than it is anything else, which is
right.
For those that don't understand Moore's Law, right? It's from my techno nerdy fun, right? Technology doubles every 18 months. You just haven't been able to buy it at old Bass Pro yet.
Right. It's around.
It's a coming. And mm-hmm. I think the conversation to have is, okay, what's this thing all about? What's the sport going to be about? Is it going to be, you know, are you not really musky fishing unless you're wearing a raccoon skin hat and, you know, in a paddle boat living in a teepee? No, right? That's right. Or are the old covers of Field and Stream and all this stuff where, again, you're in the John boat and you're shooting with a 22. We all said, no, we don't want that.
Right.
And we don't want the 1970s. We don't want that because they had mono. Like, you see what I'm saying? The evolution of things.
Right.
Are we stopping here and going, this is quintessential muskie fishing. It should be this. And for the remainder of its history, should be exactly stuck in this place in time. If we advance past this, it's blasphemous.
Right.
Well, look at everything you're talking about traditionally. Okay, let's open that box up. All fish were killed if they were of good size back then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Which that's what I'm saying is, yeah, like we are. And again, it's not an argument. It's a question. Yeah. Are we in the sweet spot? This is as much technology as we want to. And I think, and again, I've played devil's advocate on both sides of this fence. Personally, again, yeah, I think it's great. Let's have the voluntary.
Let's be honest. But when you and I chat in the boat or get on the phone or something like that, we play devil's advocate for each other. Like we're just, like, I'll keep fight like poking each other. It's like, well, do you mean this? Well,
yeah.
Can yeah, you? I mean, devil's can you? Advocate yeah, happens continuously.
That's,
yeah,
that's called thinking. that's what people do in constructive relationships. Burn him. Hold on, babe, get the tiki torch oil. I gotta flame this guy. But yeah, again, I've always found to truly understand a topic, you need to have a purview of both sides, right?
Yeah,
in all fronts, you know. But I think, again, my interest in the subject matter is not the short term. It is the understanding, not the long term. Trust me, boys, you're going to be taking your Garmin LSV32 and selling it on Craigslist for $80 in the next few years.
Right.
Right. Again, the reality of things of, when was the heyday of muskies? When we all had freaking flip phones? So we have like this hybridization of the outdoors with technology. Because when I started guiding, dude, it was an Eagle II fish finder that was like, that was the cat's ass. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't have it on a freaking pool floaty. Now it's so lame.
Exactly. Well, the other thing, I think if we're talking about what was the most revolutionary, I know folks are thinking, oh, it's LiveScope, but for me, GPS mapping, man.
Right. Yeah. Cheating.
I mean,
I call it cheating.
Well, I mean, think about what fishing like was like before having GPS mapping. I mean, yeah. you, You couldn't scan lakes. You didn't know where you were. You looked at a two-dimensional depth finder to see where you were, but you didn't know which way you were going unless you had like supreme sense of direction.
Yeah.
And now there's a, and that's a special person that has those sorts of skills with a deep amount of experience. And now you don't need that at all. Just follow the contours, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's right there for you. And that's kind of where I was going with, are we in the sweet spot?
Right.
Because, I mean, like brick and a rope.
Yeah.
That's what my grandfather did. That's what my dad started off doing. You know, how do you know, this end of the lake down to Niven, brick and a rope?
Right.
You know? Right. Frickin' take a painter's pole and make a mount off the front of your boat. And when the painter's pole hits something, you should probably back up.
Right.
That's exactly. Probably a bad sign. Yeah. That thing's, right. Yeah. That was how it was done. And you go, that sucked. But that's why I'm saying is like, as Mr. Nerd loved my techno crap, that I think that, again, the greater conversation is like, how are we positioning?
Mm-hmm.
This one small area in fishing in general, because I can tell you right now, saltwater, they're going to go haywire. They already have.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's done. There's too much money in saltwater. Forget it. Catching a muskie is worth $0. The fish is intrinsically a value of zero. Right.
Right.
You're not you're not taking him down to, oh yeah, we got 47. We want to cook him up ceviche style.
Right.
Not happening. You can't sell him at the docks. Right. Unless you're fishing the right lakes, call Jay. He knows the ones. But burn him. No. But so intrinsically, the fish has no value. So that might be a stopgap.
Might
there.
Save it. Right.
Might
yeah,
save
that
it.
Saves it. Yeah.
And you look at it in the bass world. We're down here in peasant land, and the bass guys I know are up there. You know, the true upper echelon of the sport. And you go.
Right.
Where they've gone is, well, if you can't beat them, join them.
Right. Well, they do have some regulations for the Pro Bass Tour now, right?
Right.
On live scope. But the reason
show me an amateur bass guy that's not running three.
Right. But now they're like, oh, you can only have this many inches of screen and this many transducers is the limit.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that they do it, though, I mean, this is what I've heard from behind the scenes. I don't have a ton of. But it's because watching fishermen watch a screen is not compelling television.
Not much.
Right. And it's like, well, okay. I don't know if it's that they're trying to save the resource, is that they're worried about it being, a saleable television show. And I get that. And but that just shows you where, that's kind of like, well, that's where the money is.
And you know what?
Here it's different. You got a bunch of people that are very, very invested, really care about these fisheries. So I think it's a very pure discussion that we've had right now. It's unfortunate that it's gotten so contentious that we forget that we all like the resource together.
I for one, don't.
But well, sorry, okay. Well, yeah. You don't.
You right, gotta throw that. Yeah, no, screw them. No.
But
that's the thing of how do we? That's it. To be honest with you, and this is a horror. What is that? A real rooster? Some Jay? Are you?
Well, of course. You know. No. That's in my house.
That's just whoa.
That's my wife's favorite clock. Sorry.
the physics professor
wasn't
gigging.
Sure what that was.
Freaking dude's living in a barn. No, dude. But it's one of these concepts of you're never going to get everyone to agree. That's an impossibility. Right.
That
doesn't happen. Things are done by consensus. And it's literally one of those deals where you go, okay, where the consensus on this ends up might not dictate the future, but at least I love that the subjects had light spread on it. Again, for me being, trying to wave the red flag here and go, this is a mere battle in the upcoming war.
Right. Right.
And where this falls, like I said, where is it going to be? Because, regulation, I mean, regulation's a like pure governmental regulation on live scope. If it happens, nobody's going to like it.
It's a blunt instrument.
It's a blunt.
I would guess. Yeah. I think it would be easy to say something like, live scope is banned, but I would be sad about that because I'm a super sharpshooter advocate or anything like that. I don't really care for sharpshooting at all myself. I have done it like 3 days total mm-hmm. and decided, it's not really my cup.
Right. Yeah.
But the ability to watch for follows, keep close to structure, cover and structure in real time, mm-hmm. to be able to watch your bait to make sure that it has kind of a hop that you want in a rubber bait, and that you're hitting the depth that you think you're hitting at.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like all of those things are like valuable, and I don't think there may be some that say, well, that turns into easy mode, but I don't think a lot of folks would say that, and I don't think there'd be a lot of folks that say, oh, we're taking that away too because that's too easy, because I mean that's on the level of GPS mapping.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of folks that would say, well, we should get rid of our GPS units too.
Yes, please do.
I'm going to get rid of those.
Hell no, I'm opening up a lower unit repair shop.
There you go. That's a good point.
Greasy but, Steve's.
But yeah, I think that old term, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, it's like, well, we really only cared about this thing, but the only way that we can get rid of that particular tactic is to throw out everything mm-hmm. that makes that tactic possible. And sorry if we, ready, shoot, aim.
Right. Boom. You're caught in the frickin' scatter
yep.
shot.
Yep. And sorry, that thing you liked to do that actually wasn't sharpshooting and probably doesn't elevate it elevates your enjoyment of the sport, but it doesn't elevate your effectiveness very much.
Yeah.
That goes by the wayside too, in the name of, orthodoxy, or, in the name of, we have to protect the fishery from the worst abuses that we can think of.
Well,
but like you said, that's the worst abuses you can think of right now are nothing to what the possibilities are going to be in 10 years.
Untold horrors of the, I'm telling you, the freaking untold horrors of
untold horrors. That's right.
Imaginable comprehension.
H.P. Lovecraft, yes, in sir. Fishing form.
It is. I'm telling you, folks. It's a rather. Rather throw that one out there. If you watch the, dude, I say that. I remember the first time I saw side scan sonar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is on Discovery Channel.
Right? Okay.
And they're dragging this thing around. It's like 1997, looking for bodies, right? There's one of those shows.
Oh, sure.
Right, yep. They're recovering. Yep. And it looks way better than what you have on the boat now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go, okay, they had that 97. We need just one of those things. Oh, it's coming. I mean, I had a gentleman that's in development of some of the products that we use in marine services. I'll leave that at that
mm-hmm.
on the boat. We were looking at my setup, and he's like, "You just wait," And that was like.
Right.
2 years.
Right.
But when and when just the development of things, and like I said, Moore's Law at the speed, it's doubling every 18 months. It
right.
might not be commercially right. available, but it's definitely commercially viable at this point, or will be shortly.
Right.
When you figure it out, I think Joe Bucher made the point, what's fair chase? Right. Okay.
Right.
Well, at a certain point, fair chase is we break it down into. Is musky fishing now, okay, you have 1 week to live scope, do we have primitive fishing, and then we have archery fishing, you know what I'm saying? Like, you look at right? Hunting. Because hunting, yeah. You go, I know guys personally go, shooting them with a gun. Now, mind you, there's a bit of finality in hunting, right?
Different than musket fishing, right, typically.
People always make corollaries between hunting and fishing, and Bob and I've talked about this, and you're not driving around spotlighting in deer and taking pictures of them, right?
Right.
Ah, we got one, let him go. But
right.
You definitely can find someone very quickly that will tell you that if you're using anything other than a bow, it's cheating. And then you ask somebody about his compound bow, and the guy says, well, he's cheating because he's using a compound. I use a recurve, right?
Right.
You've got a Zeiss scope.
Crossbows are too efficient.
Right.
Crossbows are too powerful, and they're too efficient, and the range is too long. Oh, my.
But what happens? And the reason I say we got to figure it out as a whole is because, I mean, we never will, but in a perfect world, everybody kind of figure this out, which is regulatory bodies are a blunt instrument. As Bob said, you end up with, all right, you got 6 days to shoot him with a muzzle loader.
Right.
If you don't get him in those 6 days, thank you for playing. Come again next year.
Right.
And if you have I say this solely, bass are not limited populace that a muskie is. If you go, okay, we have a 500-acre lake and there are 500 muskies and the mortality is now X, Y, and Z, it does not take a freaking mathematics genius to go, if mortality has increased 30%, inevitably there will be 4 muskies left.
Right.
And that's the fear of the antiscope, which you go... And then the argument there is, well, what if somebody comes up with a bait that's so good that you don't even need scope, and they just come to it and they just blast. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a slippery slope of how do you regulate and how you do that, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's probably a precedent for that. Like the situation with double tens in the 2004-05 era, something like that. I mean, those baits were, at that time, they were extremely valuable. Yeah. They were very useful. But, I would say it's still fair, but boy, those things, those double tens caught a lot of fish.
But then it stopped. Again, nobody knows this for sure, but at a certain point, from all the musky dogma I've always heard, on all fronts. And again, I think Bob, you and I discussed one time about fish that were caught during the spawn on like the Maumee River or something of that nature. Does that ring a bell?
Okay.
There was a study that was conducted where fish were intentionally targeted while spawning. And it showed that the fish that were caught while spawning, like right after the spawn or pre-spawn, all that fun stuff, they're in that zone. They didn't use that zone again the next year. They actually they deferred to new zones.
Right. They were caught, but that was population assessments. They're caught in nets.
Okay, netted. Okay,
yeah, they were caught in nets. They weren't caught by hook and line. They were caught in nets by the DNR, and they were tagged. Mm-hmm. And they never caught them in the same net position ever after.
So there is a question here, and this is, again, we need to take a – there's no answers to be garnered even from this podcast, folks. Unfortunately, I'm sorry to waste your time because the answer doesn't exist yet. I don't think it is a non-starter for the muskies to go, you know what? I'm definitely not just going to hang out in open water right here anymore.
Yeah.
And will it augment their behavior? Other negative impacts have shown an augmentation of their behavior.
Right. Yeah. I wonder about that too, because I think there are certain styles of lakes. This is speculation on my part, mainly because I hear about the effectiveness of sharpshooting in some lakes. And then when I see it in other types of lakes, I don't see it being nearly as effective. And I think those lakes that are like multi-basin lakes where you have fish that suspend in that post spawn area that they're suspending in over deep water, but they're high up. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the places where muskies stand out like a sore thumb. Like, if you're in open over 60 feet of water and you're looking around with your live scope, well, they're pretty easy to see. I mean, you got to get within 120 feet of them, but they're, you can see them.
Right.
You get in the weed bed or around the, you know, boulders, or they're laying on the bottom or something like that. I'm not saying they're impossible to see, but they're a lot harder to see.
Yeah, you're not going to be much less. Right. Yeah, try to sharpshoot in current. That's that work. Not the easiest thing to do. You're sitting there moving. You know, there's obviously places that set up far differently.
Right. Right. And it's, the places that I think set up like that, it seems to me, are places like those multi-basin lakes, like those Canadian Shield style lakes.
Yeah. Well, and also, some of your Wisconsin chains, same thing. Same deal where you go out there and you go, Jay was out with me a few years back, and it's like, you know, we weren't sharpshooting. You just dropped it. You're going into the area, and you go, oh, there he is.
Right. Yeah, you know? You're just setting up ready to fish structure, and you go, oh, there's one. You just take a quick look around, and
drop it right on their head, and you go, oh, they're suspended. But again, like you said, you don't necessarily. I mean, and I think that's why, again, everyone is the experience. Not experience level, but everyone's experience is different based upon where they fish. You know, it's like, the guy fishing a West Virginia creek right now, he's like, I don't think this is going to affect me.
You know? Right.
Right. Yeah. This, if you know, you're fishing out of a jet boat, there's a lot of places this doesn't affect. And I think, you know, that overarching concern, again, Herbeck said it, Eagle Lake sets up like crazy. Right.
Yeah.
I know some other bodies of water up there that set up for it like crazy. And again, it seems to be, you know, obviously you have to have a pretty significant open basin.
Yep.
You just do. But, you know, I think erring on the side of caution and just seeing what takes place. I mean, any grumblings of actual studies taking place? Do we know? I've heard rumor, but you know, you hear, oh, they're going to do one and so, but have you heard anything, Bob?
I haven't heard anything about study setup. What I know from the Minnesota side, because that's, I mean, I pay as close attention to that as I can because I live here.
Right.
And
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, I love it here.
No, I was laughing because it was just the delivery was good.
Right, exactly. But it's like, it seems like the DNR in Minnesota is certainly interested in the topic. There's been the Leech Lake, postings, you know, sign postings and stuff like that. Request has been forwarded to the DNR. They know what's going on. They have concerns. I've talked to some of the fisheries people. They have concerns too. And I don't know if they have plans to do it, but I know they're talking about it because they have the same concerns we actually all do. It's like, you know what? Muskies are long-lived species. It takes a long time for these to replenish themselves. If you really hurt a population, you can do damage for a long time.
Right.
We should probably thinking about establishing the kind of data that we need.
Right.
The problem is that a lot of folks in that are very concerned about the fisheries, they're like, well, it'll be too late. And maybe the way to do it is to, like I said, kind of thread that needle of let's not overreact, but let's not underreact either. Yep. Let's show some caution here if we can, see if we can pump the brakes on this effect, especially for the most vulnerable fisheries. You know, from there, we'll see, right? I mean, we have to test it.
I'm not an advocating statement for people who want to do it, but that you just touched on. Pay attention to where you're fishing. If you're going to do that, a place that it could have a you know what I'm saying, like a vulnerable fishery that's seeing no stocking, that is,
right.
Again, leech is super important. Again, you said from brood stock fish. The Canadians got bigger problems than rearing muskies right now, economically.
Oh, right.
You know, that's like number 755 on their list.
Right.
You know,
well, they've got great fisheries up there, and they haven't had to worry about those details for a while because they've been careful about it. They've been good stewards. Mm-hmm. The anglers have been good stewards of the resource, doing everything, you know, doing all these things to make sure it's right. And
so,
you
know,
you don't want to have them upset the balance. Yeah.
We know how to take care of stuff down here in the States, like the time Lake Erie caught on fire.
Exactly. Just how to do it. I mean, if you want Lake on fire, we're your country.
We got it figured out, boys. Everybody listen to us about everything because Lake Erie did catch on fire, but we will tell you what to do. Let me fix all your problems. And that, that's
luckily we did.
DNR's motto. We haven't had a lake catch on fire for 45 years.
I think they have that somewhere else.
That's the way Wisconsin DNR operates.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Lakes on fire. Read it and weep, baby. We're doing great.
It's just like the ones, like, you know, last time we've had an accident, you know,
7 days.
Zero fatalities.
Since, you know, years since Lake's on Fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
9,374.
Yeah. And like I said, my biggest thing is, just watch it when you can and get ready for what's next because it's going to be fugly.
Yeah.
It's gonna be there's one from the comfort of your couch as you drive your drone boat out to catch him.
The computer assesses which lure to use at what speed and spits it out. Bingo, there you go, caught him.
Oh my god. I will even say this, something that I have seen horrors of war, but I've seen lures that do things that they shouldn't do where it's like I literally not from Livingston, so not speaking out of school here, but it's like,
right.
Oh, you know, here's the temp, here's the depth, here's everything coming to your phone, right? And here's a Bluetooth camera in it. Right? Oh, and it's got an IR lens.
Right,
you know,
it adjusts the length of the lip and the angle of the lip.
Not yet, but
exact depth you're supposed to.
But buddy, I'll tell you, microprocessors are getting hella small and blue. You know, you go, okay,
you
what
they are.
What? You remember trying to connect something Bluetooth about 3 years ago? You'd just basically lose your mind, and now everything works, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing coming next. You go, oh, okay, great, and then like you're at fishing show, like, oh, and you're like, hey, check this out, and it's like, it does not look like the crap you see on Temu of like, here's the lure that swims on its own, right? Right. No, these things are like, oh man, please god no, ban that now, don't even do not I will buy the patent, just let, like, I literally have
just to kill it.
Dude, just to kill it, like if I had $1 billion, there's a lure I've seen where I would go, kill it now. Just it does, like, and I say that because I'm going, okay, I've seen this crap where, okay, we can do one thing right now. We can retrieve baits back to us, right? Mm-hmm. It's basically a freaking remote control bait. I've seen it. I've seen H.P. Lovecraft, the horrors. It's not out yet.
You can't unsee it. Be unseen.
Uh-uh. And you go, oh, all I need is my iPhone mount on my rod.
That which is dead cannot die.
Exactly. And that's where you're going, yeah, we might want to figure this out, because when you go, oh, I got one behind me, let me swim it back to the weed bed.
Right.
Oh, he's following. I can see him on the camera following right here on my phone mounted to my rod. Yeah, exactly. Freaking go, right. Go
oh,
back.
Boy.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned what I mentioned anyway.
Right.
If I had a time machine, I would be 1970s. Party at the Moon Tower. Anyway, check it. All right, guys, enough pontificating. Dr. Bob, thank you for the prattling about Jaybird. Say
night, guys.
Later.
Good night, everybody.